This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Thursday, the 12th of June. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. In the latest on Trump and Musk, Elon has issued his strongest sign of contrition yet over how he handled the rupture, saying on his X platform that he regrets some of his posts about President Trump last week, and he further indicates that he feels he went too far. The dispute, which was triggered by Musk's opposition to the tax cut bill Trump is pushing through Congress, poses a serious threat to Musk's wealth as Trump raised the prospect of retaliating by cutting off government contracts. Such cuts would hit both SpaceX, his rocket company, and Tesla very hard. Here's the Bloomberg team with the details.
To quote Britney Spears, oops, I did it again. This wasn't the first time and it won't be the last, likely, that Elon Musk makes a comment or posts on social media that he then has to backtrack. It's rarer to hear regrets from Elon Musk. And the reason there is a key difference here is he wasn't taking on regulators. He wasn't taking on Democrats. He wasn't taking on, quote, the woke. He was taking on the most powerful man in the world, Donald Trump. This, of course, the breakdown and the news story of last week, sparked by Elon Musk's long-running, it has to be said, long-running concerns about the size of the government, about the deficit, and about the debt, which, in the whole, a number of economists support that level of concern. But it was that that led to the spectacular breakdown in relationships between the world's wealthiest man and the world's most powerful last week. And now Elon Musk is walking this back. Why? He faces significant financial risks from taking on prolonging this spat with President Trump. Kathy Wood, ARK Investment founder, who I spoke to yesterday, talked about the fact that she thinks she's been a long time back of Elon Musk. She says he did go too far, and she underscored the risks to his business, whether it's SpaceX, which relies on $22 billion of federal contracts, whether it's Tesla and its robo-taxi plans, which rely on regulatory environment that will be supportive to those non-driving or driverless cars, or whether it's Neuralink, his chip in the brain business, which will need approval from the FDA. So on all those fronts, his businesses face risks should this spat have gone and extended further.
Well, we are seeing shares of Tesla rising in the pre-market, so it seems to be giving some reprieve at the moment to some of his businesses. But this falling out seemed to be triggered by Musk's opposition to that signature tax and spending bill. Do we still think that was the crux of the disagreement between these two?
His concern, Elon Musk's concern about the deficit spending, about the buildup of government debt and about the size and scale of the government has been long running. He has, to be fair to Elon Musk, been very consistent on this topic. Reporting from us and elsewhere and other news organizations suggest there was other things at play as well. There was tension over the way that DOGE, or the Department of Government Efficiency, was implementing its work. There was tensions with the U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, again, according to reporting. So there may have been other factors at play, but what seems to be clear is that this was central to the breakdown in relationships. The big, beautiful bill that President Trump is trying to push out, which, according to the forecasts, will... government forecasts in the US will expand that deficit and the overall debt load by potentially $3 to $4 trillion US dollars. That was central to the breakdown, even if there were the other factors that had led to tension between the two men. And of course, Elon Musk signed huge checks, hundreds of millions of dollars, to fund the election campaign of President Trump. And he tweeted and put out social media posts last week saying that it was down to him that President Trump got elected.
Yes,
he's now saying he regrets some of those messages.
Back home yesterday afternoon, both houses of parliament, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, considered the 2025 fiscal framework and revenue proposals. The fiscal framework outlines economic policy and revenue projections and sets the overall limits for government spending. In good news for South Africa, the fiscal framework was passed with the DA's support. Here's the DA spokesperson on finance, Mark Burke, direct from Parliament.
The DA does support this fiscal framework. We are glad of the victories it contains. And while we support it, we're not blinkered or myopic. We need reform faster. And as much as we support Project Vulindlela, it's too little, it's too slow. Treasury is optimistically predicting 1.4% economic growth. That is not to be celebrated. That is to be improved. So the response of the DA to this fiscal framework is to march on to the next hill and then the next. To fight on until we're all living in a country where we need two hands to count economic growth and only one hand to count unemployment. Make no mistake, this forward march will not be easy. Just as they told us we would not be able to stare down a VAT increase, there are those that will tell us that the problems we confront are too complex, that they are endemic, that they are structural, and we can't fix our ports, we can't fix our public service or even our potholes. But we will prevail in that fight for the same reason that we prevailed in this budget battle. It's because we have the facts on our side. It's because we have sensible economic policy on our side. And most importantly, it is because we will have the prosperity-starved people of South Africa on our side. So, Madam Deputy Speaker, the DA supports this fiscal framework. And if things go to plan, we will support four more that includes rational economic policy.
In another big story unfolding this week, Advocate Shamila Butoi, the National Director of Public Prosecutions, suggested that the National Prosecuting Authority, the entity that she heads up, has been infiltrated and that its integrity might be compromised as rogue prosecutors collude with criminal elements to undermine the authority's work. There have been widespread calls for Butoi to step down based on the NPA's failings, especially in high-profile matters. In a series of recent interviews, Butoi expressed her concerns over what she described as significant breaches of conduct within the NPA, raising alarms about the independence of South Africa's judicial framework.
What I can say is that the Constitution guarantees that independence, but you have de facto and de jure independence. I can say that I have not had interference from any members of the executive whilst I have been the national director. But what I do want to say is that there are other issues that I can't really speak about that actually makes me worry sometimes that the NPA is actually being infiltrated by people that do not have the rule of law at heart. And that, for me, as the national director, is hugely concerning.
You have to explain that, and Advocate. I can't let you go deeper into that, because is of huge concern. This is the period where the NPA has gone through, and South Africans will surely not sleep comfortably tonight after hearing you say that, if you don't back it up with whatever it is that you mean.
I don't sleep comfortably at night because of that. Not because I think that the NPA is a failing organization.
So what do you mean?
I can't speak a lot about this, but I am concerned about the attacks on the NPA, on the national director, and the reasons for this. And I can't speak too much because it's difficult, but it's something that I am going to take up very, very seriously.
With?
With the executive.
The and president, let's
we
be
need,
clear.
We need to actually understand exactly what is going on and why it is sometimes so difficult to actually do this job. Because you have all the challenges of a system, but you also have lots of agendas, externally and internally.
President Ramaphosa has allegedly summoned Butoi to a meeting, indicating that although she said the NPA had been infiltrated, she later said she used the wrong word by referencing infiltration. Cyril says he's going to meet with Butoi so that she can really download and get some of the challenges she is experiencing off her chest.
The NDPP did make that statement, and she has later said she used the wrong word about the infiltration. And I'm going to have a meeting with her so that she can really sort of download and take out of her chest some of the challenges. She is facing a number of challenges, but the NPA has really done considerable work to stabilize itself, as well as to go on with various prosecutions. Now, quite often, we look at those where there's failure or where there are mistakes, and we think that the whole system is not working. And she will be able to speak to that herself, and as she does when she talks to me. So I don't believe that there is state capture now that is underway in the NPA. I do believe that there are some really good prosecutors in the NPA, and there are those who are putting a lot of effort, and a number of cases are being prosecuted, and including those that came out of the Zondo Commission.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
A new report released today by the Free Market Foundation and Solidaritate quantifies the negative impact that BEE has had on the South African economy. 4 million lost jobs, trillions in GDP gone. Alex spoke to Tiens Dubesson and Dr. Monet Milan.
At the end of the day, regardless of the intent, the fact is that the policy has been enormously damaging, and it's gotten increasingly harmful when it comes to the economy. And that's really what we wanted to do with this report, is to say, regardless of your feelings surrounding the policy, this is what it's costing the economy. So maybe you're pursuing it with the best of intentions. Maybe you're pursuing it with corrupt intentions. There's almost certainly people on both sides of those equations. But the fact of the matter is that this is not a effective allocation of economic resources. It does distort the market. And it does, unfortunately, also open the door for a lot of bad actors to manipulate the system. But I think the main point here is actually that, you know, one has to emphasize that even in its best form, even when everybody is acting with the best of intent, and even when everybody is looking to truly have a broad-based empowerment, it's still incredibly harmful to the economy. So I think we can almost shelf the intention, because you know, it's just going to be a case of lesser or greater evil. But the fact of the matter is that when you're looking at the overall economy, it's still going to be hugely damaging to economic growth.
And any attempt at gains being made is immediately wiped out by the lack of economic growth, because to truly empower people, you need economic growth. You need that upward mobility. You need companies and corporations to be growing in order to fully absorb new people into their ranks, especially at the higher levels. And if that doesn't happen, as a direct result of BEE, then what's actually happening is for every person you empower on the top level, you're preventing people from moving up the ranks through the middle and more senior levels, and from actually getting a foothold in the workplace in the first place. So that's, to me, the most disastrous outcome of this policy, is that over since 2007, when BEE was really intensified, when it wasn't just transfers of ownership, etc., we've lost about 5 trillion rand in GDP. And can you imagine the good that could have done? We've calculated that, and it's immense. But I'm sure we'll get to that in a moment. So it's disempowering many more people. This chart that you're showing here is perhaps the best example. Instead of growing this meager 29.4% over the last couple of years, we would have grown 118%. And to put this into further context, Alec, South Africa used to be comparable to, we're still viewed by analysts as an upper middle income country. And in 2006, we definitely were an upper middle income country. But if you look at GDP per capita and GDP itself, we're now more somewhere between a straight middle income and a lower middle income country. We used to be comparable to some European nations, even in terms of GDP per capita. If we continued on this growth trajectory, we would have been slightly above Brazil now, whereas now we're in terms of rankings 39 places behind Brazil. And that's just a shocking result. And in this report, we are able to link this lack of growth directly to BEE. And to make it even worse, we looked only at the direct costs of compliance. We didn't look at things that are most likely even worse, such as opportunities that never realized, investment that never realized, things like foreign investment, especially like new technology coming in that was blocked by this policy. Starlink is, of course, the great example, but it's not just Starlink. And that's also where this policy attains and achieves the opposite of what it actually means to do, because most of our rural populations are black. They desperately need to be empowered, and technology would have empowered them. Instead, this policy has led to most of rural South Africa being completely excluded from the digital economy and being left behind.
That full interview is available on the BizNews TV YouTube platform. On the international company news front, we see NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang saying that the company is working to expand its market for AI accelerators. In France, the chipmaker will team up with Mistral AI to use local artificial intelligence computing to run the startup's services.
We have a great partnership here that we're announcing today. A young company, a CEO I really like, and he's trying to build a European AI company. The name of the company is Mistral. Today, we're announcing that we're going to build an AI cloud together here to deliver their models as well as deliver AI applications for the ecosystem of other AI startups so that they can use the Mistral models or any model that they like. And so Mistral and us, we're going to be partnering to build a very sizable AI cloud here, and we'll talk about more of it later on today with President Macron.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back on Monday with more context on the global and local front. As always, thanks for watching and have a great weekend.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.